Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang Dhammang Sanghang Namasami. In modern jargon, we say that this is coming to the pointy end of the retreat. Hopefully it is, and your retreat hasn't ended yet. Because sometimes when you get to the last fortnight, then people think it's almost over. Sometimes, if it's the last month, you think it's almost over. Sometimes the last year, you think it's almost over. It's amazing just the way that people waste so much time in their life. And I still remember just an event when I was a school teacher, when one of my fellow teachers, he'd only just started about 3 months into the year, and he was being a teacher for a while, and he applied for another job. He got that job. He had to finish his contract teaching at a school. And then he came up to me one day and he said, "I just found myself wishing away 6 months of my life, waiting for this future job to materialize so he can get out of the school." And when he told me that, 6 months is a long time to wish away. And 6 months, 6 weeks, 6 days, 6 hours is a long time to wish away. So because of that, we should never go sending our mind too far into the future. Instead of sending it into the future and just waiting and killing time or passing time, every moment is a wonderful opportunity for us to understand the Dharma, to make peace, to understand what peace means, and to get a deeper understanding, you know, of Dhamma, life, ourselves and everything. I think everyone who's come here at least has that understanding that truth, wisdom, is to be found just in this moment, not just inside the body and inside the mind, but inside this moment as well. And how we just do waste so much of our time just being anywhere outside the present moment. And you look at the way that you spend your day. Look at the way you spend your life. It's always running after the next thing. It's the next thing, never this thing. You see, always planning, always manipulating, always plotting, and always sacrificing this moment for something in the future. And that idea of the future and its promises always pulling you and pulling you and pulling you and pulling you is what's called craving, and that's what creates samsara. And sometimes the future, because it is uncertain, because we don't know what's going to happen, it promises that if we are only wiser, more skillful, or more forceful, more willful, that we can shape this future to be just what we like. But unfortunately, for those of you who are already smart, you know that this future, you can never quite get it right. For those of you who are still young and still have hopes that somehow, somewhere, someplace, that you can make a better life, make a more happiness, more peace, more satisfaction, I can guarantee that you'll never find that. I can guarantee that because I know enough about the nature of the mind, the nature of happiness and suffering, about what makes this life work, to know that in the future you will never find your dreams. That's all they are, just dreams and fantasies, but they delude us. And so much of life is just following dreams which we will never reach. Just coming back on Sunday from a committee meeting at Dharmasala, Even though my driver was so efficient getting back in record time, we still managed to actually to see a rainbow just off the Roe Highway. And it's just a nice, perfect rainbow. And of course, where that, because it was late in the afternoon, the place where the rainbow hit the ground, you could see it. And we have this myth in sort of in the West that at the bottom of the rainbow, where the rainbow hits the ground, there you will find the pot of gold. It's a wonderful little myth, simply because you can never reach that end of the rainbow where it hits the ground. And even as we were driving, you could see the end of the rainbow. It just travelling so fast along the ground. Always out of reach. You could see it, so it's promising that it was there, but you can never get to it. And that's the nature of craving. Whatever the goal of your craving, whatever you want to achieve, either in worldly things or even in unworldly things, that's all it is, just chasing the end of a rainbow. And when you understand that, you understand what makes the world go round. What makes samsara? The samsara, which means the realm of perpetual wandering. Many years ago, 100 years ago, they used to punish people, criminals, by putting them on treadmills. I remember reading an account of a prisoner 150 years ago, who had to go in these treadmills. He calls it walking up the hill, which has never got a summit. And these men would have to walk up and up and up on this treadmill for hours and hours and hours. Of course, they'd probably get very fit if they survived. But it was a punishment. And sometimes it's a very beautiful simile about life. Always walking up this treadmill, like this wheel. And sometimes you see those in rat cages, you know, to sort of try and get the rats some exercise. And rats, being stupid, love running up and down this wheel. However, it's a lot of, you never get anywhere. And it's because it's a hill without a summit. A path with no end, a journey with no destination, a struggle with no fulfillment. That's what samsara means. And you can test that out in your life. You can use your experiences you've had so far in life, or you can use your intelligence and infer from those experiences to know that every time that craving promises you something, it always lets you down. Whether it's a cup of tea, which you aspire towards. Check what it's like when you want that cup of tea or coffee. And then check what it's like when you have it. It's one of the reasons why people sometimes, if they have a cup of coffee, they like talking at the same time. You know why? Because you're not really tasting the coffee. If you really tasted the coffee, it's nowhere near as delicious as you expect. If you actually tasted the food silently, with mindfulness, with clear comprehension, you'll just see that all these pleasures which are promised to you, they are not going to be satisfying. I usually say some of these quotes in the talks to lay people, but I always remember from my time as a student when I used to get into poetry, there was a famous line from the Scottish poet Robert Burns, who said that pleasures are like poppies spread. You pluck the flower and the bloom is shed, or like the snowfall in the river, white for a moment and then gone forever. Because poppies, when you pluck them, just the petals just fall off. Or when snow falls in water, it's just white for a second, a moment, and then the water dissolves it and it's gone. He said that's what the pleasures were like, just so ephemeral. Ephemeral means they're there for a moment and they pass away. You need another one to fill up that hole. And it's going for the next pleasure, going for the next thing. That is what samsara is. Always going for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. always, forever out of reach. Because that is looking for happiness, for pleasure, for fulfillment in the next moment, in the future. And be careful you don't do that as a monk practicing your meditation. The jhanas, nibbana, even peace, you'll never find it in the next moment. So if ever you sit down on your cushion and say, right, this is it, I'm really going to meditate in the next few minutes, you should be very careful there. The next few minutes don't exist. The only time you ever have is now. As I keep on saying, now is the time your future is made. This is where the action is. So always remember that, because I have a lot of work to do. I have a lot of responsibilities. But I always remember that now, right in this moment, is where I can be the most effective. If I want to be peaceful, if I want to be happy, if I want to be wise, I have to put all my attention right now, never looking into the future unless you really have to. That's why so often I just don't know what I'm going to talk about, because that's just going off into the future for me. Instead, I put all my effort into this moment, focus in this moment, investigate this moment, and basically I find all the Dhamma which I really need there. When you focus in this moment, then a retreat. How many weeks have gone? How many weeks have still to come? I was just writing a check today out for one of the workers, and I had to ask him what the day was, because you do forget the days when you're in the present moment. This is actually what happens when you live in the present. What that present moment does is actually grounds you in reality. Takes away the dreams and the fantasies of what might happen and what it will be like. I remember, for example, one of the monks. He was a novice monk, but he came from, this is when I was a young monk. He was brought up in Los Angeles, and he said one day, this was in the 60s, he said one day he heard that the musician Bob Dylan was in town. He was a very famous musician. And he used some friends and contacts to find out what hotel he was in. And he got round security by going in a back door. One of his friends let him in. He spent the evening with Bob Dylan. And I remember him telling me this, hanging out with one of these great stars. I remember him telling me, he said, once he just asked Bob Dylan, he said, ah, it must be great being Bob Dylan. And Bob Dylan swore, even I can't repeat what I heard him say. And he said, no, it's terrible being Bob Dylan. And that really shook this young man, because he always thought that fame was something which was worth aspiring towards. And when he actually found out what it truly was, he thought, why do people want to be famous? In my life I've met famous people, I've met rich people, I've met powerful people. But I never seen them as happy people. And if you actually ask them, they'll probably say, I'd rather I'd chosen another path. All those desires, what are you aiming for? Sometimes, again, as a young monk, you fantasize and dream and have some ideas of what it might be like if you did this or did that. But whenever I had a fantasy or a dream, I'd always deliberately continue it on. To then what? And then what? And then what? As a young man, a young monk, it was finding a nice girl, getting married, getting rich, getting famous, whatever. But then what? Having kids, yeah, but then what? In the end, it got to be retiring. And then what? In the end, it always ended up and then dying. So all of my hopes and dreams, that's really where they ended, in a coffin. And when I thought of it that way, I just really, how stupid people are in life. They're chasing something which doesn't exist. Ajahn Chah put it so beautifully when he said it's like searching for the tortoise with a moustache. And that's what people do in life, searching here and searching there. Searching for some satisfaction, some meaning. And it's wonderful that some of us who have come into this monastery because we've had some intuition, some wisdom, even experiential wisdom, to know that the only meaning in life which is truly worthy of the word meaning, the only thing which is really fulfilling, is the peace in the mind, is the stilling of the thoughts, is the calming and peace and kindness inside. That's the only thing which really has any value. It's as if one is searching for some meaning, some value, some truth in life. And then you're fortunate enough to have come across that. And where does that exist? It doesn't exist in the next experience, in the next hope, the next dream, the next travel. It always exists right in this moment. I've seen that with people because I travel so much. They can't wait to get to the destination. You see that when you queue up wait in the airport lounges. And the same people who rush to try and get onto the aircraft first of all are the same people who rush to get out first of all. You think, well, if they wanted to get into the aircraft early, they must like being in there. But they always try and get out first as well. They're just always ahead of themselves, always on to the next goal, never really being able to be where they are. So I try and train myself that way. When you're waiting for the plane, you're waiting in this moment. You're not waiting in the future. I made that distinction. It's a nuance. It's a very incredible, beautiful distinction. You can wait in this moment. In other words, you enjoy this moment, where you are, what you're doing, how you feel, enjoying the surroundings, whatever that happens to be. And you're not waiting in the moment for when that plane leaves. When you're inside the aircraft, you're waiting in the moment, sitting down, meditating or reading something or whatever. And you're waiting in the moment. You're not worrying about when is the plane going to take off, when is it going to reach the destination, when's the meal going to come. You don't wait in the future, you just wait in this moment. When you wait in a moment, you find that the plane does take off, the plane does get to the destination, the meal comes. And you're always there to enjoy it when it happens, instead of always being somewhere else, off into the future. When you learn simple tricks like this, which you think may be just obvious, when you learn this and you cultivate it, make much of it and refine it, you see that just by waiting in the moment, looking for peace, for happiness, for truth in this moment rather than something in the future, means that you start to become silent and still. Because why is it that people can't meditate? When you have any difficulty, why? It's all because you've always got this goal of some ideal meditation, some place you want to be. All it is just chasing for some other tortoise with a mustache. I talk a lot about jhanas, but I always remember one of these suttas which I really enjoyed when I read it because of the phrase it had at the very end of every time it mentioned a jhana. Whatever you imagine it to be, it's something else. It's a beautiful saying of the Buddha. So even these great jhana things which I keep on talking about, what you think it is, what you imagine it is, I can guarantee it is absolutely different than that. You can't know what it is until you get there. So all of your aspirations is just, again, looking for a tortoise with a mustache. And that tortoise is called jhana. That jhana which you're looking for does not exist. In the same way, the happiness you're looking for does not exist. You're looking for the wrong thing. You haven't got it, what that thing is. Instead, when we stop searching for a mustache, we realize that such things don't exist. We just stop looking in the future. We don't wait in the future. We don't aspire to get anywhere in the future. And when we lose that will to go somewhere and do something and reach something and get something, when we abandon that, it's called letting go. It's called letting things be. It's called making peace, being kind, being gentle. It's called renunciation. And we talk about renunciation, nekama. It's a great word, but we have to know what we're about to renounce. When the Buddha said that right intention is renunciation, he didn't mean renouncing the holy life. He didn't mean sort of renouncing meditating. He didn't mean renouncing your precepts. That's not what he meant by renunciation. What he meant by renunciation is renouncing the craving, renouncing that will, which always moves you away from things. Instead, we come close to things rather than moving away, close to the reality of now. It's hard at first. That's why they're one of the great practices you've read and heard, all those Kuba Ajans, you know, the teachers of old of Thailand. They always say that try body awareness first of all. And it's hard to come close to one's own body. Why? Because this body hurts. It aches. It has inertia. It's hard to keep it moving. It's such a tough thing to be with the body at first. It's the last thing I want to be with. I'd rather be somewhere else. Doing something, thinking I'm achieving things, going somewhere, planning. Because when you plan, it's a fantasy. And fantasies, just like Hollywood movies, you can actually make the ending just as you want. Just like in movies, you can airbrush the girls and the boys to look beautiful. In real life, it's not like that. In real life, you can't airbrush out suffering. You can't airbrush out sort of the faults and flaws in life. That's why people prefer to live in fantasy world, in second life, and be an avatar where you can actually make it just as you want. Real life, as most of those people know, sucks. But it doesn't need to suck that way. Instead of actually going away from things, the path of the, you might call it the spiritual warrior, but that's just far too aggressive for me. The path of the spiritual hero, I prefer, is the one who instead of actually goes away from things, goes into things. Some of you will know that when you've had pain, you know, or sickness, if you go into it rather than run away from it, you find the problem lessens enormously. You know, you'll find, I remember one occasion when I was teaching in Bunbury jail. I was the prison visitor in those days. And one afternoon I would go teach in the evening, travel down in after lunch, it was the only time the Bunbury train went. And I'd hang out either in the parish house, or one afternoon it was a beautiful spring day, sunny, not like today when it was, well actually like today but even warmer. I went out to the beach to meditate. Had some great experiences on that beach. On this one occasion I was meditating there, I wasn't that still, because I heard a stone whistling past my ear and somebody shouting out, "Get off our beach!" And then another stone sort of whistled past. It was very good, the kids throwing stones at me were not good shots. And I thought, I'm just going to sit here. But after a few more stones, getting a bit closer, I realized that those kids are going to make some bad karma soon. So I got up. Instead of running away, I walked towards those guys. Because that's the nature. You don't run away from problems, you walk towards them. You don't go away from the pain of the body, you go towards it. And of course, you can imagine what happened when I got up without fear and walked towards these six or seven kids throwing stones at me. Most of them ran away. There was only a monk, and they had me totally outnumbered. But just being fearless made them afraid. One of the kids stayed there, so I could talk to him, and then the other ones came back. Apparently it was a time when Bhagavan Rajneesh was threatening to come to town. They thought I was one of them, an orange person. When I said I'm just a Buddhist monk, they apologized. They asked me a few questions about Buddhism, said it was cool or something like that, and off they went. End of problem. I always like that simile of going towards things rather than running away from things. Going towards this moment, going into it, going into the body, rather than running away from it. So when you do have an ache or a pain in the body, or a sickness, you don't run away from it. You don't think, when is my sickness going to go? When is the pain in the tummy going to be eased? When am I going to be fit again? That's waiting in the future. Instead, we wait in the moment. We're with the pain, we're with the ache, we're with the irritation. Sometimes I have to do that every day, but it's not my pain in the body. It's the pain of having to sit there after lunch and talk to all these people. Now, of course, if you just do it the first time, it might be interesting. But I've been doing that for about 25 years. And basically, if I didn't have good meditation, I'd be bored out of my skull. People telling me all their problems and asking silly questions. And you have to do that every day, up there talking. And the only time, well, apart from my retreat, the only time you have a time off is actually when you go overseas, and then you get that 24 hours a day rather than, well, not 24, you do go to sleep, but you get even more people asking you questions. You all know those stories about people actually meet you at the airport and they ask you all these questions, and in the toilet they ask you the questions, and then they drive you to an appointment, they ask you the questions. And they take you back to have a rest and they ask you questions on the way, and they ask you questions as you go up to your room. As they give you lunch, they ask you questions. As afterwards, when you're having lunch, they ask you questions. Afterwards, they ask you questions. Gee, you get no peace if you didn't know how to wait in the moment. So you wait in the moment. You're just right here with things. And sometimes I laugh inside to myself. Just when people look at these schedules when I do go overseas and how much you have to teach, and think, well, that must be so difficult. I'll be honest with you, it's not. You can be doing all these teachings all day, you know, from early in the morning. Sometimes, oh, in Singapore now they have this idea of going and do this early morning meditation in Canning Park, about 6 o'clock or something. So you start about 5:30. Someone picks you up and takes you to the meditation place, and of course they ask you questions on the way. Could I just ask a question, Ajahn Brahm? Yeah, sure. Just one. I said, yeah, come off it, keep your precepts, you can ask another one. And so you meditate there early in the morning, they ask you more questions, then they take you for breakfast and they ask you a question. This goes on all day, until about 11 o'clock, sometimes 12 o'clock, before you can get back and have a rest. And not many people work. How many hours is that? From 5:30, that's 18 and a half hour day. And so how can you do that? It's easy, just in the moment. It's just one moment long. And it's no joke. Sometimes I look at those programs and then I get worried. As long as I don't look at it and don't sort of imagine it and think about it, as long as I'm only waiting in the moment rather than waiting for the whole thing to finish, then I'm at peace and happy. I go into these things rather than run away. And that's actually how you become free of that suffering. The reason I can do that is because that was drummed into me by Ajahn Chah. You don't run away from things. Somebody asked me, why is it? It was only recently. Why was it that Ajahn Chah would sometimes sit all night? You know, he'd start a talk and he'd carry on, babbling on all night, and about 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the morning, usually about just 4 o'clock in the morning, he would stop. He said, I'm going back now, you carry on with the morning chanting. And it's just all night. And you think, gee, this is really unfair. He didn't get any sleep. But the reason why he was doing that is because when you first, you're always thinking, when's Ajahn Chah going to stop? When is he going to ring the bell? When is it going to be over? When can I go back to sleep? When can I go You're always waiting in the future, waiting for something to happen rather than waiting to be here. And I think that was the main reason why he taught that. Why he did such things. Now, he wanted monks because the alternative, worrying about when Ajahn Chah was going to finish, when is it all going to be over, that was suffering, and intense suffering when you're out there and you couldn't even go to the toilet. But if you'd wait in the moment, just be right here, and don't worry about how long this is going to last, it's here, that's all you need to do. And then there was a great sense of freedom and rest. As long as you didn't think about the future, it never existed. And when the future disappeared, so did 99% of suffering. And you just realized, you know, what samsara is. Samsara is will. Sankara makes this samsara go round. It creates it. It creates all these dreams and fantasies, these castles in the air, which you aspire for, but you can never reach. And eventually, like many of the people you go and see, dying. Sometimes they ask you, is this it? I remember one person saying that to me at the end of his life, is this it? And he was actually quite a successful man. Totally disillusioned. As a monk, I won't be disillusioned. In this moment, you can really find that peace and contentment. It's the contentment. This is the trick. This is the most, one of the most important words, which I love to focus on. When I'm meditating, when I'm working, whatever I'm doing, you try to not make yourself content, but recognize the contentment which is always here. So to try and make yourself content is just more waiting in the future, doing something. But recognizing contentment means that in this moment there's all the contentment I ever need, as long as I focus on this place, no matter what I have to do, no matter all of the work which you have to do, no matter all the things which can go right or wrong, this contentment in the moment is the key to happiness. To stillness, to silence, to jhanas, to nibbana. When you're content in this very moment, what you're doing is renouncing that craving. Renouncing what I've often called the fault-finding mind. That fault-finding mind, just told the Christchurch students in here, was it yesterday, about the simile in the brick wall. You've all read that simile. You've all had it banged into you, at least I hope. But just because you've heard it many times does not mean that you've understood it. If you've understood the simile of the brick wall, then you'd never criticize anybody. You'd never complain. You'll never even find fault with your meditation. You'd be totally at peace. Similarly, the brick wall recognizes that those things which you thought were flaws, you can still be content with them. You don't need to fix up those bricks. You can let them be. It's a great thing to be able to live with what you thought was imperfection, things which weren't good enough. Students with flaws, teachers with flaws, huts not good enough, bodies which are not good enough, life which isn't good enough. You can live with all of that, especially food which isn't good enough, or whatever else, or a cup of tea after lunch which hasn't got quite the right amount of condensed milk in it. Doesn't matter, it's good enough. You can be content with anything. And that's one of the things which I found. I can even be content with typhus fever. I remember that. It was an amazing experience. I could be content with a toothache, which was stopping me sleeping. Or even just on my retreat, when you had a bad back ache and you couldn't sleep. Every time you got in a position, you couldn't stay there long enough because it hurt. not long enough to fall asleep. So you're always moving from one position to another position to another position, never getting sort of a relief. But you can be content. And that skill is just one of the most valuable things. That's like winning the lottery, knowing what contentment is. The lottery, you can spend it, other people might take it off you, and after a while just, yeah, you got money, but so what? But contentment, that's greater than the biggest wealth, more effective than having the power of a president with an army to control. Because contentment frees you and brings you so much satisfaction. And you learn from experience, and you learn from this insight that you can be content with anything. I mean, you can be content with just the aches and pains in the body. You can be content with other people calling you a stupid idiot. Or you can be content with people just letting you down. You can also be content with your death and the dying moments. The most important time for contentment is right there when you're about to leave this body. If you have no contentment there, if you're still waiting in the future, you'll get reborn in that future. If you're content in this moment, even though it's incredible pain, you'll be content to have that pain. And it can be done. It's not that hard, as long as you go into it rather than allow it to push you away, hoping to find some place, some time, some situation where that pain is not there anymore. That's called the mental suffering. That's the trouble. When you go into things, you don't run away. You are a hero. You have courage. You're strong. You're not what I call a namby-pamby cream puff. I'm not just saying that because, gee, if you're a namby-pamby cream puff, you're just going to suffer and suffer. You're just going to be led around the nose by Mara, just his plaything, toying with you, giving you a bit of sort of pleasure and then kicking your ass. Why is it happening? Because this is what happens when you play around in that world. Come and be real. You know what it's all about. At least you should do by now. But with contentment, you completely go beyond Mara. You go beyond craving. You go beyond pain and pleasure. This is just life. You're content with life. You're content with getting old, growing sick, dying. It's part of life. And look at it. You can't fight it. There's an old saying in English, if you can't beat them, join them. That's actually much wiser than people think. If you can't beat this mind, join it. If you can't beat sloth and torpor, join sloth and torpor. If you join sloth and torpor, it vanishes. If you really join, unite even with lust, it disappears. Because all lust is promising something in the future. It's a trick of lust. But if you go into it rather than keep going with it, then it stops. This is why I always say make peace with things. Be kind, be gentle. And if you do that properly, in this moment, not go off into the future, all these problems actually they can't survive. They stop. And it's the contentment in this moment, this stillness, is where you find the great peace. Just how many times people just keep talking and talking and talking. I have to talk, it's my job. People expect that of me, but they don't expect you to. I told you that I'd rather spend all my time in my hut. I'd rather not talk to people after lunch, but you have to. And sometimes that I'd be there having to talk, and other people who didn't need to are down there chatting. I think, gee, if any of you monks want to chat with the lay people after lunch, or chat with each other, you come and sit where I am and get me off the hook, if you really like talking that much. But even as a young monk, I never talked very much. I preferred silence. Silence was more peaceful. It felt better. In fact, you all know that I was so silent in the first few months when I came here to Perth. Hardly said a word. That's one of those true funny stories. About 6 or 9 months, I'd hardly said a word. And then Ajahn Chacko went to Thailand. He was the first abbot here. He went to Thailand to go and visit Ajahn Chah again. As you know, Ajahn Chah was sick then, but just to have a bit of a holiday, he deserved it. So I had to give the Friday night talk, talk to people on Saturday and Sunday. And I always remember this girl came up to me after I gave a talk. "I never believed you could speak. I thought you were brain damaged, Ajahn Brahm." That's what she said to me. Because I never spoke. And because people had never seen that before, they really thought that I was mentally impaired. But I wasn't mentally impaired, I was mentally very strong. I just, why speak? If you don't have to, don't. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Nothing to say, shut up. Sometimes you wonder, why do people speak so much? I think it's just escapism. Escaping from this moment because they don't understand this moment. If you understand this moment, you don't need to speak. Contentment is what brings silence. I've used that as a simile before. When sometimes you've seen these married couple, elderly, and they tell me they hardly speak in each other's presence. It's not like this Thai woman married to an Italian guy. They didn't speak to each other because they had anger towards one another. It was amazing, for about 2 or 3 years, they never spoke a word. They were running a restaurant in Perth, and I remember with Ajahn Chacko, we were going to the airport, and so we went in there, her invitation to have lunch before we went to the airport. So she served us lunch. And then the husband came over and said, "Is everything okay?" And then she came over and said, "What did he say?" It's so funny. They wouldn't speak to each other, so we had to sort of, you know, say what the husband said, and then we told the wife what the wife said and all that sort of stuff. But the real silence together is when you're content together. You don't need to say anything. Why do you speak? What's the point of it? That's why the Buddha said, just talk little. That's what I said today to some people after lunch. One of my favourite sayings of the Buddha. Actually, I don't know where it is. It's somewhere because I read it a long time ago. It's the great rivers flow silently. The River Nile or the Mississippi or even the Thames. Even the Swan River in Perth. It doesn't make a noise because it's strong and big. But small streams, you just have to go, you know, down the road by the ablution block. And when that little thing starts flying, it makes a huge noise. Sometimes I can hear it from my heart when I'm walking meditation. So a small stream makes all the noise. But big rivers flow silently. So you ask, what are you? Small stream or a big river? So you do that because you're using people's ego and pride. Say, come on guys, you know, be a deep river. Flow silently. Because in that silence, you have contentment. You don't need to speak. You don't need to destroy the silence. It's one of the sayings. It's even in the calendar, I think, last year. If you can't improve upon the silence, shut up. It's a great little saying. If you can't improve upon the silence, shut up. A lot of time you can't improve upon the silence, so be quiet. And then actually, people think you're wise. And actually you are wise because you don't talk so much. When you're silent, you've got a chance to listen. And that's the most important thing with insight meditation. Someone who can listen. People, I know this because when you're giving a talk, some people are thinking, they're not actually listening at all. So the talk is a bit of a waste of time. But sometimes people are silent, they do listen, they do pay attention, which means there's an opportunity to learn. Even in the time of the Buddha said that. He said he was giving a talk, and I think it was this monk who was destroying pictures in the earth. Buddha was teaching, but he wasn't listening. He was thinking, wandering, fantasizing, destroying pictures. If you're going to be wise, we have to have this amazing ability to listen. I'm not just saying listening with the ears, listening with the mind, listening to this moment, listening to the body, listening to the breath, listening to the mind, to gather enough information and data to eventually understand it. So understanding, there becomes freedom, there becomes peace, there becomes happiness. And when we listen to samsara, we listen just to what I mentioned to someone the other day, the siren calls of nature. In Greek mythology, if you don't know this, I think in Homer's Odyssey, one of the difficulties he had to face in this long voyage was these dangerous beings called sirens, these monsters, but they had these beautiful voices, and they were just so attractive that they called people towards them. And there were such beautiful voices and sounds that people's boats would be drawn to this incredible sound. And these sirens lived upon these dangerous rocks. They drew the ships onto the rocks with their calls, and when the ships foundered and sank, these goblins would eat all the sailors. That's actually how they drew the sailors to their deaths, these beautiful siren calls. That's craving. They're promising you happiness, joy, fulfillment, love, satisfaction, but it brings you to death and suffering. The siren calls of life. After a while, you should suss them out. Be smart. How many times have they really given you what they promised? After a while, you do become smart. You do get insight and understanding, and you listen without moving, without following things. As you listen to life, you learn from life. One of the things you learn most of all is in stillness, in silence, in contentment, is the only place you find freedom. And freedom is something which the human being will always incline towards. People will fight wars for freedom. They'll write books and struggle all their life for freedom. But as a monk, you can actually find freedom. And what is freedom anyway? Freedom is when you're not told what to do. Freedom is when you aren't pushed and pulled around. Freedom is when there is no will left. Because will is the enemy of contentment. Will is what pushes and pulls you. It's will which is a prison guard which stops you feeling free. If you don't believe me, calm that will down. Subdue it just for a minute and you'll find you'll have all the freedom you'd ever want. Then you recognize through your own experience what freedom is. This is why craving is the enemy. Will destroys contentment, and contentment overcomes will. So by developing more and more contentment in the moment, not waiting for the future, waiting in this moment, developing contentment by not having a fault-finding mind, this is good enough. You'll find, like I've found so many times, unexpected things happen. when you develop a little bit of contentment, it's like, oh, this is good enough. And sometimes you've got to convince yourself, this is good enough. And after a while you say, actually, it is good enough. Actually, it's bloody good. This is fantastic. Because by developing contentment, you're developing a stillness, which is the power of the universe. This is where the force of liberation, the force of the mind is generated. Contentment doesn't just stay static. Contentment is this dynamic force which grows in intensity and gives you power. That power from stillness, from contentment, makes you mindful, really aware. And I know this so often, after you've developed a bit of deep meditation, then you know what mindfulness really is. Sometimes you sold mindfulness like a second-hand car salesman. This is a really good car. It's owned by a monk, only driven from the monastery to the retreat center, or whatever, and all this lies which samsara gives you. An old bomb, that's all you have. And that's usually natural mindfulness. It's just an old bomb of a vehicle. But then one day you get a Ferrari. New, limited edition, with sunroof, alloy wheels. And that's like mindfulness which has been empowered by stillness. You know, you've got into a deep meditation, really content. You let go, it's powerful and deep. And then that mindfulness, vroom! You can really go to the deepest of insights with that vehicle. It's powerful. Ferrari, give me my past lives, vroom! And off it goes, you can't stop it. You get me some really deep insights and off it goes. That's the power. This is why I don't just say these things, you know, just to annoy you or just to sort of, you know, out of theory. This is experience. This is what happens. And if you really want to get insights, you really want mindfulness and know what it's like, powerful stuff. Don't think I can't do it. I've said here categorically, me, Ajahn Brahm, I cannot meditate for my life. I can't meditate. I get out of the way. I stop doing things. I just develop contentment, peace, stillness. Contentment. Just being here. I don't aspire when I sit down. Right, this is it, I'm going to get jhana now. You can't do that. I've tried that so many times. Absolutely stupid. Really dummy monk when I try things like that. Instead I say, I'm going to be peaceful right now. I'm going to make peace with this moment. I don't even say that, what I'm going to do. I just don't even do it. I stop doing. It just happens. I know where stillness comes from. I know its cause. I put that cause into place. Contentment. This is good enough. For those of you on retreat, please remember contentment. If you're struggling, trying to get somewhere, you get very disappointed with your meditation. Because it's never good enough when you have a goal. I made this point to someone on the interview. Years ago, I would ask people, I wouldn't give so many interviews, but I'd ask people after they've had a retreat, how was your retreat? And I remember it says, people kept on telling me, say, I was just really getting into it, and then my retreat was over. And then I'd say, okay, take another week, 2 or 3 week. And then, how did it go? Well, yeah, I was just really getting into it, but then it was over. And it was, if you give 6 weeks retreat, yeah, really getting into it, but then it was over. Why is that the case? And they weren't being dishonest. No, actually, this is how it felt. And the reason was is because they were striving so hard in those first 2 weeks. And they came to the last day or whatever, then they sort of let go. And then it started to happen. If they'd only let go at the beginning, if only your retreat was 1 day long, then at the end of the 1 day, you'd be really getting into it. And then have another day. Then you're into it. You understand what it means? Struggling and striving too hard. We're stopping the stillness born of contentment. The deep, profound contentment which changes this moment. When you're content with this aching, painful body, the ache and the pain begins to vanish, like the mist evaporating because of the power of the sun. This dull mind, just so hard to get it to watch the breath, it just will not do it. It's just so stubborn, it's got so much inertia. It's like trying to sort of, you know, push that cat off your mat in the morning. You know, for Apichato or myself, when that cat sits on your seat, you try and push it, it just does not want to go. That's Emily. But that's what the mind is like. But when contentment, stillness, the mind just goes. Just goes in, deep, still, free peace. Contentment seems that it won't change anything. That's why many people say, if you're content, nothing will happen. If you're content, you'll get nowhere. You'll still be as sloppy, as dull and as restless as you always were. You've got to do something about it. That is people's mistake. Be content. And you'll find the world changes. Not the outside world, but the inner world. The way you look, your relationship, peace, freedom, jhanas, enlightenment, they just flow from that contentment. By developing that stillness, that silence, that peace, you have all the happiness in the world. So don't go looking for happiness tomorrow, tonight, in the next moment. Stop looking outside of the moment. Stay where you are. Don't move. Don't go anywhere. Don't speak. Don't think. Watch. Feel. Be with contentment. You find that's the inner path. That's what leads to the deepest enlightenment. That's why it's so easy to do. You can be content with anything. Therefore, you can always get enlightened, even this evening. But do it 100%. So that's a Dhamma talk this evening.
Arahaṁ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṁ bhagavataṁ abhivādini suvākato bhagavata dhammo dhammaṁ namassāṁ supatipanno